All right. We're going to go ahead and get started now. We want to welcome everybody joining us today. This is our annual New York Cotton Market Roundtable. The Ag Market Network is holding this meeting today. This has been actually our 15th year of doing it. We want to first thank ICE for hosting us this year, and special thanks to Tim Berry and also to Ben Jackson. Ben is CEO and Exchange President of ICE. And matter of fact, Ben, would like you to have a word here if you'd like to share some thoughts about ICE.
Sure. Thank you very much. It's our pleasure to be able to support this initiative and this event for now the 15th year. Main update I'd want to share with everyone is a significant milestone that we passed just this past week, and that's in regard to World Cotton. So a lot of the people on the phone, a lot of people that are participating in this trade our contract, the number two contract on a day in and day out basis. And I'm happy to report that we have a new contract that we're targeting to launch at the end of this year that'll be World Cotton. The main differences in this contract versus the number two are that this contract will allow delivery of many new origins, such as Australia, Brazil, India, several West African nations, in addition to the U.S. They'll also have delivery locations in addition to the U.S. where we'll enable delivery in Australia, Taiwan, and Malaysia. The final gating item that we had, as it's been many years that we've been working collaboratively with both ICA, AXA, and working groups in development of this contract, is that we needed to get legislation passed, a bill passed in Congress and through the President in order for us to list this contract in the U.S. And I'm pleased to say that this bill passed the House and Senate over the last several weeks, and the President just signed the bill on Wednesday of this past week. So now that it's law, we've passed that final gating item that we've needed to launch this contract, and the next steps are that we're completing legal work now that we know the jurisdiction where the contract's going to be launched for the warehouse keepers in the various locations that we're going to enable delivery. We're signing up warehouses, and we're working with our partner EWR on the work that they need to do to handle the logistics for the cotton bales outside of the U.S. So it's, again, our pleasure to support this. We're excited about this launch. And, again, we're targeting the latter part of this year for the launch of the World Cotton Contract to trade alongside the number two.
Great.
Thanks again.
Thanks. That's good news. Let's also recognize and thank our sponsors. Cotton Incorporated has been a long-time sponsor of ours, and Jeannie Reeves is here. She's always been an important part of what we do. Bayer Crop Science, we want to recognize the support they've given us over the years. Brent Crossland has been very instrumental, and Monty Christian in that. And Farm Press Publications has been a sponsor of ours over the years. The format for today will be we will introduce our cotton panel and let them cover cotton, various regions in this country where cotton's grown, and talk about the progress of the crop. Then I'll introduce our special guest speaker, Joe Nicosia, and then we'll open it up for discussions and respond to any questions that you might have. Before we get into the introductions, I want to go over a little bit of the history of what the Ag Market Network is. We've been in existence since 1998. We made a decision last year to change our website and to promote what we do to a larger audience. We have seven shows that we have on our website. And we want to thank iPoint TV in Dallas for the work they've done in helping us develop our website. It's recently been redone because a year ago, we just had one show, and that was this teleconference. Now we've got seven, and total listeners for our teleconference in June, 102,000 total listeners, and our total listeners for all of our programs in June, 584,000 visitors. So we've grown quite a bit over the last year since we've made these changes. So we'd encourage you to visit our website. Let's start off and introduce our speakers. Dr. O.A. Cleveland is professor emeritus, Mississippi State University. He's very well known internationally and as a cotton expert. He's been with us since the very start of the Ag Market Network. He'll cover the Southeast and the Mid-South and the Delta. Then we'll go to Kip Butts. Kip is new to us. He's senior cotton analyst and director of energy services with Informa Economics, and he will cover Texas. And Gerald Nieper is president of Calcot. He's in his 6 years as president of the 83-year-old co-op. He has been with us since our first year doing the Cotton Marketing Roundtable, and Gerald will cover California and the Southwest. Also want to make a mention of we've lost one of our panel last year. Dr. Carl Anderson was a member since the very beginning. He passed away last fall. We miss him. He was a very important part of what we do, very important to cotton all over the country, specializing in Texas. So let's go ahead and get started. OA, give us your view of the Southeast and the Delta.
Well, thank you, Pat. I appreciate the opportunity to participate, and thanks so much to ICE for always welcoming us. We still oftentimes speak in terms of the New York Cotton Exchange, though we well know it's ICE, and some habits are difficult to break from time to time. We've got an outstanding crop both in the Mid-South and the Delta. We've got have made excellent progress after somewhat of a slow start. And the crop conditions are very, very good for the most part, good to excellent for about three-quarters of the crop. And that's pretty much on par with respect to last year. Of course, our acreage this year is a good bit less than last year. We've got about 2.1 million acres in the Southeast that we expect to harvest. And we're looking at a total production of around 4 million bales. Probably will come down a little bit off of that, and I would anticipate when USDA makes its adjusted plannings here on August the 12th, we're probably, in my opinion, they'll be interested to see what others say, I think we'd be down about 100,000 acres or 50,000 to 100,000 acres in the Southeast, or less than what's being carried right now by USDA. But the crop is, as I said, progressing very well. Georgia will account for just essentially half of that 4 million bale crop in the Southeast. North Carolina as well. The North Carolina and South Carolina crops are doing very well. There are some dry spots in Alabama, but of course, South Alabama, it's some excellent land, but it's that land is always a week away from a drought because it's so sandy. But they've been, made excellent progress so far this year. We'll just have to see how that goes. In Alabama, one state that's been able to hold generally its acreage relative to other states. So that's a real plus for them. Moving into the Delta states, again, we're looking at a little over a million acres to be harvested, just a slightly more than a million. And again, I would not be surprised when the August 12th adjustment comes with planted acres. We'll see that down a little bit, particularly the state of Tennessee. I think it was overestimated anywhere from 40 to 50,000 acres. Still a great debate about that, but the crops are looking good. The biggest thing we're seeing, nonetheless, is that the last 2 years we've had 70s nighttime temperatures, the low 70s, and a few high 60s, but mostly the very low 70s. Now, this year we're seeing temps above 75 degrees at night, so whereas the crop looks good, it's not fruiting like it has the last 2 years. So I think we've got to think in terms of all the 1,300, 1,400, 1,500-pound crops we had last year. We're not going to have those this year. So the crop in that regard is going to be smaller. We won't have any one-ton guys. We had a double handful last year in the Mid-South and Southeast, and I'm not going to say there won't be any, but essentially there'll be few and far between if, in fact, there are any. And not having the 1,300, 1,400-pound guys this year is going to bring that yield down, though we're carrying it right now for the Mid-South at a little a little over 1,025 pounds per acre. I think that's going to come down and for the Mid-South yield, in my opinion, is going to push 1,000 or just a little bit below 1,000 pounds per acre. And of course, last year's yield was pretty close to 1,100 pounds. The Mid-South ranking the crop, difficult to do from the standpoint of any kind of indexing system, but the people I talk to that like to run that index for the Mid-South, they're saying it's a 7 out of a 10, and whereas last year they had it at this time, they had it 7.5 out of 10. I would say that the August rains are going to be particularly important for the Southeast, more so than for the Delta, though we are starting to get some dry spots in the Delta. Some people are wanting rain. There's a lot of cotton in the hill area relative to the Delta area. For example, there, I know when I started working with the U.S. Department of Agriculture, and there were 453 gins listed for the state of Mississippi. And I've not checked the final list, but I believe there are 15 operating gins now in the state of Mississippi. It's a very significant difference. Of course, just a story of time is really all that is. But we've got a great crop. It's not as big as what I think that we're talking about in the Mid-South and Southeast. I'm going to take one step further, Pat, with your permission, and just one final or two sentences. Infrastructure-wise and for the future, I'm a little bit concerned. We're seeing now the regional banks, the bigger banks, wanting to back out of agriculture. Any ag production loans, they're backing out. And not only that, they've started backing out here in the last 2 months, and we've just got the plant, they got the crop in the ground, and all of a sudden they're wanting out of those loans. I think that they certainly won't get out of the ones that they furnished money for this year, this crop. But so it's a bit of a problem to see that we're having difficulty approaching financing, and that's not just for cotton.
Okay.
But cotton is suffering more than the other crops.
Okay.
Thank you so very much. I appreciate the opportunity.
We're going to go to Kip Butts now to talk about Texas.
Well, thank you, Pat. A couple of comments about Texas. Of course, the largest growing state, and with a lot of uncertainty regarding the crop this year. We've come into an exceptional moisture profile, one of the best we've seen in a long, long time. It's comparable to the 2007 and 2010 crop years when we had very, very good yields. Unfortunately, it is Texas, and we're in a situation where September, October is going to be terribly important for this crop. Big question on their acreage is, USDA said they were going to resurvey Texas simply because of the extreme moisture we had early on, and there was 88% of the crop planted at the time of the survey. So the question is, are they going to drop the area quite significantly? There's a lot of discussion regarding that. With 88% planted, though, it's a hard call, but we're probably not going to see a huge change, maybe a little over, a little under, more likely a little under, by the way. But this moisture profile has us in a situation where we may wind up with a very special crop. If we continue to have timely rains, our meteorologist in our shop is telling us that we're looking for slightly below average rains for the rest of the growing season, and slightly, very slightly warmer temperatures, call it really about average to a degree or so above. The heat units are behind on average right now. That's a big concern. However, they've caught up in the last week or two. We know that the cotton plant can catch up very, very rapidly. So it's something to watch, but we're not terribly concerned with it as we speak. The real situation on this will be, do we get the timely rains, and are we in a situation where we'd be looking at a 7.5-plus million bale crop? That's possible. I'm not forecasting that, but we're certainly looking at a situation where that's possible. The flip side is that we could have a terrible sort of September-October period and wind up with a crop somewhere around 5 million or so. So there's more uncertainty involved with this, which is not unusual. That's typically what we're looking at in Texas. One thing, too, with the El Nino pattern this year, there is a possibility that we could have a slightly later than average freeze. It's not something that's forecast, but it has been seen as a pattern that sometimes comes with El Nino. And with that, because we're behind on our heating degree days, we might well have a little more time to finish this crop out and make it even larger. Our bias, you can't tell, is for a little bit bigger crop and a good yield based on what we know today. So, you know, over the state, most of the state is in pretty good condition. We've got a couple of dry spots, but they're not significant. And so we're just sitting here pretty optimistic about the crop this year in Texas.
All right. Thank you. Gerald?
Thank you, Pat. Well, the Far West is acres, like every place else, are down versus a year ago, some for price reasons and some for water reasons. In Arizona, for example, there are very, very good prices for durum wheat this last year, so a lot of guys planted wheat, went into alfalfa, so cotton acres suffered a little bit. Last year, Arizona planted 150,000 acres of upland cotton, and this year they're looking at 80,000. We think it's a slightly larger than 80,000, but not significantly so. 15,000 acres of Pima cotton this year, I think around 18,000 acres. So total acres in Arizona sitting right around 100, maybe as many as 110,000 acres versus about 160,000, 165,000 a year ago. California, definitely water was an impact this year. What water guys had, they decided to save their trees or their orchards, or tomatoes, almost anything but cotton. Cotton was last on the totem pole when it came to deciding what to do with their available water for a lot of guys. Upland acres didn't suffer a whole lot, 57,000 last year, around 50 to 52,000 this year, but the Pima acres did suffer. Of course, Pima is the majority of acres in California. Last year, 155,000, this year around 110,000, and don't really have much argument with it. As far as crop conditions, last year both Arizona and California set record yields on upland, and probably not as good as it was a year ago. Ligus, a little bit of a problem this year in California. Arizona this year is a little bit behind. They were a little bit behind on heat units. Had good heat early, cooled down, and then it heated up toward the middle of the summertime. So on average, heat units are about the same, but they didn't follow a very good pattern. But still a very good yield this year. Around 500,000, probably production in the Far West between Arizona, California, New Mexico, roughly 500,000 acres or 500,000 bales of production. That's down of upland cotton. That's down about 300,000 from a year ago. And Pima production between Arizona, California, New Mexico, and a little bit there in the El Paso area of Texas, roughly 415,000 bales of Pima production. That's down from roughly 560, 570 from a year ago. So that would be my report, Pat. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Well, let's introduce our special guest speaker. Joe Nicosia is Senior Head of Merchandising Platforms for Louis Dreyfus Commodities and Executive Vice President of Louis Dreyfus Commodities, LLC. Joe has joined us in the past. He's been a regular speaker for this roundtable, and we appreciate him joining us today and sharing his thoughts on the cotton market.
Thanks, Pat. In the movie Groundhog Day, Bill Murray plays a weatherman who wakes up each day to the same events over and over again. In cotton since 2011 and 12, we've been reliving the same sequences of events every year. The world grows too much cotton. China bought the surplus and stored it, protecting its farmers at really high prices. Starved its mills by only selling some of that cotton out at 30 to 40% higher than international levels. And its mills would then have to petition the government so that they could get quotas to try to buy more competitively priced cotton from the rest of the world. In turn, that encouraged the rest of the world to continue to grow more cotton, and thus we did. In the current season, we've finally woken up to a new day. The new regime is that China has stopped buying cotton. Its mills and now can buy the domestic crop at prices that have fallen back to about 15 to 20% over international levels. China has restricted the quantity of foreign cotton going into their country by lowering the amount of quota that is being given out. And now that brings us to the present, where we see China beginning to auctioning off its stockpile that it's bought over the last several years at prices that are about 10% over international levels. And they're pledging to make 1 million tons available. The key result of all the China policy that we've seen, both past and present, is that the access of Chinese mills to competitively priced cotton has been strangled. And thus, they have turned to spinning polyester. The cotton blend in China has fallen from 53% just 5 years ago to 39% currently. And the result of that is that China's cotton use is down 9 million bales. A big factor in the cotton market's share problem or blend problem in China is that China produces over 70% of the world's polyester. And its polyester staple fiber plants are only operating at about a 63% capacity. And the polyester staple fiber costs about 42% less than Chinese cotton. So the mills there have a strong incentive to buy and run synthetic fiber instead of cotton. It would be tempting to think that the consumer preferences around the world, especially in the developed country, the EU and United States, would have resulted in a shift in the U.S. apparel sourcing to cotton-rich countries like India or Pakistan. But that hasn't happened. 5 years ago, the percentage of U.S. textiles and apparel imported from China was 47%. Last year, it was 48%. So clearly, we understand we buy what they make. To understand this, it's necessary for us to take a look at something of greater importance to cotton use. So let's take a little quick focus on what we see today and its effect on current cotton demand. First thing to look at would be what we call women's bottom wear. If you go to the shopping mall today and you look around and see what women are wearing, if you did it 10 years ago, what would you see? You'd probably see most people in jeans, a heavy cotton-intensive product, maybe some sweatpants, short dresses, skirts, some cotton slacks. But if you go today, what do you see? Leggings, tights, yoga pants, and the athleisure wear is increasing popularity even with men. During the last 5 years, the U.S. has imported over 42% more tights. The imports of yoga pants are up 32%, and the imports of women's jeans are down 10%. And to add insult to injury from the cotton use, the move in fashion has been to lighter and lighter fabrics. Today, a pair of jeans weighs 15% less than it did just 5 years ago. Many of the products competing with the women's bottom wears are primarily or entirely composed of synthetic fibers. This year, the percentage of textile and apparel imports into the United States that's primarily cotton has fallen below 50%. 5 years ago, it was 58. So just in 5 years, the United States alone has had a 14% loss of cotton consumed. In absolute terms, the numbers are really bad. During the last 5 years, the annual volume of primarily cotton apparel imported to the United States is down 11%. And that's while total imports of apparel are up 9%. The EU is in a similar situation. Truly, cotton's biggest enemy is the blend level and man-made fiber. There's a second major long-lasting consequence from the world textile industry from China's cotton policy, and that is that the new mills and investments to produce cotton yarn are primarily being located in other Asian countries. Some of this expansion is for the purpose of actually producing cotton yarns for export back to China. So we have roughly today about a 1.6 compounded annual growth in consumption since 2011-12, and the world has managed to increase cotton demand by 8 million bales despite this decline in cotton and China's cotton use. So even though there are some places where cotton use is going up, where are they? Well, Pakistan, Bangladesh, Indonesia, and Turkey are all up roughly between 700,000 and 1 million bales since 2011. Vietnam has been a great success story, up 2.5 million bales, much of that by Chinese firms investing in new plants. And India is up almost 5.5 million bales, with consumption now reaching 25 million bales at a compounded annual growth rate of 6.3. If that continues, India will actually overtake China in about 5 to 6 years as the largest consumer of cotton. With the change in China's cotton policy regime this year, India has also had to take on a new heightened role in the global market. For the last few years, China has served as the world's cotton support price system. Now that that's ended, that role goes to China, goes to India, excuse me. India operates a minimum support price program under which cotton is bought by government companies for roughly 70 cents a pound and stockpiled. This season, they bought 9.2 million local bales. This action kept prices above international competitive levels and held India's cotton exports down to about 4 million bales, which was less than half of what they shipped last year. The result of this was a very big boom for the United States. It allowed the United States to sell more cotton than we would have, and it also resulted in our carryover being much more moderate than it could have been. But there's one big difference between the Indian cotton policy and the Chinese cotton policy. China's policy is buy and hold. Today, they're starting to dole out their stocks at about 85 cents a pound, but they're just selling a few thousand tons a day. India, on the other hand's policy is to buy and dispose. Of the 9.2 million bales that they've bought this season, they've already sold over 4 million, and they say they'll sell the rest by December. And this is important because it could cause a problem for U.S. exports going forward in their campaign for 15-16, as we may find ourselves starting to sell our new crop into a satiated marketplace or without many of the China quotas that we've come to rely upon. India has tremendous potential for further growth, not only as a consumer of cotton, but even more so as a producer, and this means that they're going to be an important competitor of the United States in the export markets for years to come. In fact, with China's farmers in the interior provinces abandoning cotton production as a crop, India's crop will be by far the largest in the world in 2015-16. Currently, India is projected to have a crop this year of 29.5 million bales and a consumption of 26.3. Again, being its largest competitor in the export market, it's important to understand what takes place in India. Their stocks are more than adequate, and it looks like we'll plug them in for an export number of about 4.7 million bales this year, slightly more than they've done in this last year. And if you look at today's headlines of what's going on, what do we see? That they're dominated by CNCRC, PCC, CCI, TCP, Mahed Federation. And all those groups, each of these are state agencies in the cotton business that today has cotton for sale. Right when the Brazilian and Australian harvests are coming on and the biggest buyer in the world, China, is gone. With China restricting its quotas to its 894,000-ton agreed WTO minimum, their imports are forecast to be down between 6 to 7 million bales. Vietnam will take over as the second largest importer in the world at roughly 5 million. It's conceivable that it'll only take maybe one more year to where Vietnam will actually surpass China as the world's largest cotton importer. What this means is that exporters are going to have to be content with what they can carve out from the remaining markets like Pakistan, Thailand, Indonesia, and Turkey as the world cotton trade shrinks from an average of 42 million bales annually over the last 4 years to only 34 million. The majority of that being the lack of trade going into China as they started their new cotton regime. The good news is that the world's spinners want U.S. cotton. Due to their contamination-free attributes, U.S., Brazilian, and Australian cottons are the most preferred pieces of cotton in the world. They provide spinners with highly automated machinery with the fiber that they need to run them trouble-free. The U.S. should be able to maintain its export share roughly near the same at around 32%, and this should obtain us in 2015-16 with roughly about a 10.5 million export number. With that said, let's take a look at the rest of the U.S. industry. Domestic use in the United States, we think, is rising. We've seen investments from Chinese, Indian, and Mexican spinners all investing in the United States, which will cause the U.S. textile mill consumption to rise from 3.6 to 3.8 million bales in the year in front of us. And incidentally, it's interesting to note that the U.S. spinning industry is not converting to polyester. That puts the total use for 15-16 for this year at roughly about 14.3 million bales. And it's going to have to be done, and we're going to have to satisfy that use from what is now the smallest acreage planted in the United States since the infamous PIC program in 1983, I'm sure you'll all remember. However, we've been incredibly lucky this spring and summer. And so while we have had some losses in South Texas and the Coastal Bend, the rains that have been more than generous on the High Plains, as Kip was just mentioning. Total annual average rainfall in Lubbock, Texas is normally about 17.7 inches, and we've had over 18 inches just in the last 3 months. The southeast crop is off to a good start, planted on time. It's had regular timely rain so far, and it can be said in some places that the dry land crop looks as good as the irrigated crop. Therefore, the USDA's 14.5 million bale forecast for 15-16 to us looks reasonable by right now, and if weather stays normal, we might actually exceed it. So with the usage of 14-3 and a crop of 14-5, cotton futures continues to look range-bound, and thus our days of the weatherman and Bill Murray Groundhog Day seem to continue. I could try to say more about 15-16, but it's simply unexciting without some kind of large weather effect. The same cannot be said, though, however, for corn and beans. We've had a rally here recently in corn and beans during the last 6 weeks. The June ending stocks report was light for both, implying higher corn use, and less soybean production. The reason I mention this is that it raises the specter of some very interesting situation come spring. The competition from these crops should remain extremely strong for planted acreage. And yes, there could be light at the end of the tunnel. With even less acreage likely to be planted to cotton in the United States in 2016, what will our crop prospects be with just normal rain on the High Plains? So let's just take a look at it and see what we get. So what I did is I said, let's go ahead and say we leave acreage the same, and we think it's probably going down in the United States in most places, but let's use it the same. And then let's take the current production levels in every state that we have now today, except for Texas, the same. So this year is a pretty good year. You've avoided any disasters, so that should be slightly optimistic. And then in Texas, let's go ahead and keep acreage the same and use the six-year average for abandonment and yield. And in that 6 years, we'll include this year at almost record-breaking amounts for smallest abandonment and extremely high yields. So if you put that together, our crop size for 2016 is roughly 12.5 million bales. Now, that's an interesting number. If that scenario unfolds, the 2016 crop could look quite exciting, especially since December of 16 is currently at 64 cents, a level that will do little to encourage additional planting. Turning to the world situation, lower prices have begun to do their job. We have consumption forecast to exceed production for the first time in 5 years. And yes, although stocks are extremely high at 95% of use, 60% of those stocks are in China where they're going to stay. And the remainder of the world's stocks are much more manageable at a 54% use. Prices have also already begun to do their job in discouraging cotton planting. Acreage around the world this year is down about 8%, and the majority of that in the United States and in China. We expect China production to continue to fall, which is going to allow the Chinese government to continue to slowly reduce its stockpile. In relation to China today, all that really matters is how much they're going to import. And unless there's a change in policy, it looks like that number will be between 6 to 7 million bales a year. So to conclude, today the problem that cotton has isn't that there is too much cotton, but that we don't use enough of it and there's too little demand. It's important to realize that in the last 5 years, there's actually been an 11 million bale increase in cotton demand growth in the world outside of China. World cotton demand needs to return to its trend growth rates and to recover its blend against man-made fiber for it in order to fully recover in pricing. That's not going to happen until either China lets its cotton price reach international levels and competitive with its mills, or until China waits until it loses an additional 11 million bales of cotton consumption to the more friendly cotton countries. Thanks, Pat.
Great. Thank you. Well, we started off talking about crop conditions in the U.S. Let's talk about crop conditions overseas. Anybody got any feel for China or India, how their crops are going? Joe?
Well, India is an interesting one that you bring up because, you know, as mentioned before, we're into an El Nino season that typically would have some challenges inside of India. India started out with a quick spurt of precipitation early in the year, and then it went dry. As we speak now, this is a very important week because the central parts of India have been too dry. But the rain is moving in now. So I think this happened about 2 or 3 years ago. It was the same thing. We were in a drought situation, and right when we had this meeting, it was about when the rains came, and it looks like that's starting to happen again. So as of right this minute, still a long way to go in India, but as of right this minute, it looks like India is going to be okay.
What about China?
China's okay. You know, you've had most of the crop now is out in the far northwest in the Xinjiang. I think it's important for people to realize the eastern provinces, which traditionally over the years, the Yangtze River Basin and the North China Plain that had, which had the majority of all the production in China, is quickly leaving cotton production. They're converting to cash crops and to grains and to easier crops to grow. It's really falling out of favor there. So China's becoming highly dependent on its production out in Xinjiang. And that, in and of itself, is also starting to slowly diversify into other crops. So the Chinese crop is in okay condition to where it is now, but the key thing to watch there is its acreage level, as the new supply price support system has changed, and that has changed the outlook for producers in China to grow cotton, and we think production there each year is going to continue to shrink.
Okay. Well, we've been in a sideways market in terms of price for a while now. What, low 60s, high 60s? What takes us out of that away?
Well, two things. The old economics class, production and consumption. One, production on one side, and Joe's discussed that very well, and he made a very strong case for demand and the changes in demand that we've gone through and what's going to have to happen with respect to demand to move that higher. The caveats of the changes in China with their consumption and consumption moving to other countries instead of China, but we still see the Chinese, not the spinning industry, but the textile industry is still going great guns, but they had record imports this past month of yarn. Actually, they imported like about 1.5, 1.6 million bales of cotton equivalents last month. So while they're losing the raw cotton consumption, they're importing more and more yarn to make up for that in that regard. But those are the two things that we'll have to see. And very much appreciate and enjoy Joe's comments with respect to changing the blend ratios, the blend patterns that we've been caught in for the last 5 or 6 years, where our share, the cotton share, has gone down. That has to be controlled, turned around.
Okay. Kip, you mentioned informer's view, I guess, on weather patterns in Texas.
Right.
This is a late crop. So
it is a late
what crop. Happens if it's a normal pattern?
Well, we run out of time, essentially, and you're going to wind up with the yield probably a little less than your expectation. And that's sort of, having said that, he's also forecasting a normal to slightly higher than normal temperatures. If we get that, the cotton plant can adjust, and it may mature better than you would expect. But a lot of it is the late season when we get the timely rains, and heat units are a big problem. So we're kind of leaning towards a better than average yield for them. But it's a long growing season, and we know that West Texas can provide us with an awful lot of excitement along the way. So I don't want to really commit, but my bias is that we'll have a little better yield.
Well, we're all cotton people, but we probably need to talk about the dollar. It seems that has such an effect on all commodity prices, and recent news has been more toward a deflationary environment for commodities. Who would like to take this, Gerald? You got any thoughts on the dollar or the trend in prices?
Well, I think the dollar is just reflective of the fact that I don't know that the United States is doing so terrific, you know, by itself, but in a vacuum. But when you compare it to some other countries, we're doing okay, and that's giving the dollar some strength there. I don't think the dollar is going to get crazy like it did several years ago, but. You know, certainly the increase in dollars putting some pressure on commodity prices, but I don't see it going a lot higher from where current levels are. What's it trading, 97, 97 and a half right now, the dollar index? Maybe it goes up to 100, but, you know, not a lot further. You know, I think Joe made a very good point in terms of talking about the demand for U.S. cotton, Australian and Brazilian cotton. And so regardless of what the dollar does, I think it's going to keep prices somewhat elevated as opposed to, let's say, several years ago when it would have had a bigger impact.
Okay. And just, Pat, if I can interrupt, Joe, I put you on the spot. I particularly would don't. If you have this information, I'm picking up ideas that the crop that we planted, the seed that we planted, ended up planting, it was a lot shorter season maturing than what we anticipated, suggesting that we might have some quality problems, lower mite, some mite problems, and some maturity problems. Have you seen anything with respect to what kind of quality we might expect? And I know that's so weather-oriented.
No, I really haven't. I mean, look, we are going to have a slight shift in Texas to more dry land acres than we will with the irrigated, especially with the heavy rains up north.
Right.
Some of the washouts and areas that we had there were in the traditional, what you would have in your longer staple areas. But the northern parts of Lubbock have been having some lower mite situations on themselves, even on the irrigated land.
Yeah.
So I haven't heard a lot about that. I was out in Lubbock a couple months ago and south of there, the producers really do this time want to make a good crop. And it's really to their advantage because, as we know, they've struggled with drought for, you know, three of the last 4 years really bad. And they're, you know, it'll do them wonders to be able to build up their average yield profiles that they have. And that's real important to them going forward for benefits and program implications that are there. And now with the water, this is their chance. You know, so it would be highly beneficial for them to really be able to get as big a crop as they can when that opportunity comes. And I expect, you know, people always question that crop out there a bit. We think the crops have really come on with the heat that's just come in here this last couple of days and the week ahead. The forecast looks reasonable for what they're going to have. So we're cautiously optimistic on not only the quality, but on the quantity of the West Texas crop.
Thank you.
Let's talk about the new contract. Is this something, Joe, do you think that the industry will embrace?
Well, the industry's going to embrace it. You know, the World Cotton Contract has got a great deal of potential. It's going to be new. And as anything that's new, it has its challenges, which is, you know, it has to be able to build a broad-based constituent seed in order to trade it from where that's there. You know, conceptually, it is it's what we do. You know, the majority of cotton trade today has moved into Southeast Asia. That's where the business is, both from an import-export as well as a consumption, and even to a production between Pakistan, India, and China. The production centers, pretty much the center of the world for cotton, is Southeast Asia. So this contract's going to give all of those countries and those participants an opportunity to have a little bit more direct say in price determination. So, you know, hopefully it'll work. You know, it has to be one of those that is used by the participants. You know, if the participants and the people who really need the contract use it, speculators, everybody else will come as well to it. So it'll be a learning curve as it gets up and going. But it's something that the industry's been calling for quite a while.
Well, something that you brought up, OA, that we need to talk about financing problems. I mean, if that is the case, then 2016 really could be interesting. And Joe, you mentioned it. I mean, we have the potential for maybe a small crop when you combine financing problems and good grain prices. That could be a challenge to get the amount of high-quality acres that we need.
Well, definitely it does. I know talking to growers right now, looking at the prices we see next year, they're saying Mid-South and the Southeast, well, another 10%, maybe 20% reduction in acreage next year. That's, you know, that becomes huge. We're down to 1 million acres harvested in the Mid-South. And, you know, that's less than the state of Georgia, and it's the entire Mid-South. It used to be the heart of cotton country. National Cotton Council was located in Memphis for a reason. And now I know the folks in Lubbock want to move it out there, but that's neither here nor there now. But we do have to be very concerned that we're going to take a good leak in acreage, particularly in the Southeast and Mid-South. You're looking at cotton at 65 cents, maybe it's 70, maybe it's 60 cents, and then you're looking at beans at $10 or $9. And these young folks that are younger folks that are coming into agriculture today, you know, why do I want to go through all the problem and the management difficulty with respect to cotton when I can throw some soybeans that seed out there, some oil seed, and come back and see if there's anything to see if I need to harvest it later on? You don't have to work the same. It's entirely different. Now, corn, of course, you know, it's very capital intensive, just like cotton, but you don't have to manage it as carefully as you do cotton, but it's still very capital intensive. And I think without question we've discovered that what dryland cotton can make, but dryland beans are not going to make, and dryland corn is not going to promise much at all. And that's the big thing we're seeing this summer with dryland cotton and beans. They're going to start cutting corn next week in the Mid-South, and the dryland corn and cotton, corn and beans are just really hurting. They're really cutting out.
Hmm. Well, is China, or farmers in China, Joe, are they sensitive as U.S. farmers are to price? We see have had a pretty good cutback there. Will that continue, or do you think we'll hold steady at this level?
Yeah, and it's going to continue because, I mean, you have to go back to the policy of where they were, you know, 5 years ago when they were getting, you know, $1.30 to $1.40 for their product. So you can imagine what happened there. Their production was exciting, growing. Farmers were very interested in growing that crop. Well, as that changed, and they went to more of a market support price system where they did it through subsidies as opposed to doing it through procurement of the high price. And that subsidy was not equal. In the Northwest, the area where they're still growing a lot of cotton, it was much larger than it was in the interior. In the interior, where the subsidy was much smaller, those people are leaving cotton, and they're going to continue to do so. There's a lot of gins. You know, you were talking about in the Mid-South, how all those gins have started to go away. Same thing's happening in China in the interior. The gins are getting fewer and fewer of them are running. They're running smaller and smaller quantity. It's not practical to continue to run them. And the lifestyle's changing there, too. You know, people are moving more into the cities. They're getting more industrial jobs. They're looking more for, as they're moving into the middle class, they're starting to leave the heavy labor intensive, and as always said, the cotton is one of those crops, so they're leaving that behind. So production in China is going to continue to drop.
Before we get into our price projections, anybody have any open thoughts here, any questions, anything they'd like to bring up? Okay.
Where are we going to eat dinner tonight? Thank you.
Well, Jared, we're going to start with you. We want to know where cotton's going to go.
Well, it's going nowhere fast right now, and I don't think growers are very interested in selling at these price levels. And you know, mills are interested from probably here on down, so there's some pretty good support down here. But there's no impetus to get us moving higher anytime soon. So, you know, I think we're just going to spend a lot of time just churning between 63 and maybe 68 cents until we get some better direction.
Okay, Kip?
Well, unfortunately, you know, I'm going to echo what you said. We need an event, something to excite the market to go higher. And at this point, there's just there's nothing out there to generate it. And if in the current environment we can get to 68, 69 cents, I think farmers will be happy to really lay into some selling there and take care of their crop. It's really a challenge to get the higher levels. Although mill use has improved in places, the bias would be that we could take this market into the high 50s just for a short period. I don't think it stays there long because mill demand is really going to change at that level. But range-bound market, I'm saying, you know, I hate to all be on the same page. That's not very exciting, but that's really what I'm seeing out here right now, too.
Okay, Joe, what are your thoughts?
I think it's important to understand the dynamics of the marketplace and what's happening in the world today of why we're in this range-bound situation. We all know that there's 100 million bale carryout, and a lot of talk about, yeah, but it's locked away into China, so that really doesn't affect anything. The rest of the world's super tight, so prices can rally. But in reality, what happens is when prices do start to rally, if they rally too soon, the United States becomes uncompetitive. And what happens to all that cotton that was being held in India? All of a sudden, it becomes competitive, becomes cheaper, takes our market share away from us. Also, as U.S. prices come through, the Chinese stocks are starting to be doled out little by little. So there's no panic in China. They know that if they run short on cotton, they can buy it tomorrow. They have a supermarket full of cotton offered to them every single day. So it's hard to create any panic from the buyer's side there. And on the downside, it works much the same as when the U.S. becomes realization that it needs, that it has extra bales to sell, doesn't do us any good to hold them, price goes down, and it goes down to a level that it goes underneath the Indian support price to where now we become the cheapest, and then we sell. So we're bound by these two groups, and the only reason way we're going to change that is either that the United States is going to have to go down to sell, and we're going to have so much to sell that we can't sell enough, and it keeps going lower. That's not going to happen with the size of crops in the 14 to 15 range. You know, it's going to have to be 16 to 17 for that to really happen. And or you'll have to have a policy change where you're not going to have the support price in India or China just floods the market. But those are probably not happening either. So although I think the market would like to break out of its range, it would like to do something different, unless we can really push the U.S. crop to 16, towards 16, or it drops back down towards 13, I don't really see it happen. When we go to 62 to 58, we sell U.S. cotton. And when we go to 67 to 69, we stop. So that would be my range to where I think the things are going to go. I think there's value in the cotton market, 62 to 58, and I don't see much value of it above 67 to 70.
Okay.
Well, you know, it's very unusual. I think every one of us is going to say the same thing. I very much appreciated Joe's analogy with Bill Murray and the Groundhog Day, but that's exactly where we are. It's we wake up every day and we get up to, you know, a couple of weeks ago we got up to 68. And, finally, we're here now. We're going to take it up, so we'll touch 70. Didn't happen, and now all of a sudden today we're back, well, maybe not today, I've not looked at the market, but yesterday and the day before we were back down to 64 and a few points, which is, you know, you get down to 64, you're thinking 63. So as ever, I mean, this range is just there. It's there and it's not going away, as Joe said, as Gerald said. And I don't know, we go back to when, September, October, this range has been there with the exception of a few weeks or a week or so around the 1st of December where the market got below 60 for a few trading sessions. It was the high 50s or something, 59, 58. I remark, we'll make one more remark if I may, thank you. We have a meeting every December, a group of us get together, very similar to this group, and last December, I walked into the meeting, and every single person there, you know, market was trading 59 cents, and no one could understand why cotton was not 50 cents. And these were people a lot smarter than me, and I said, well, you guys just made up my mind. We're going to 65. We're going to 70, 75 cents. You think it ought to be a dime lower than it is now. People aren't going to grow it. Mid-South's not going to grow it. Joe said the market does want to go higher. It keeps telling us it does, but there's no demand up there. Farmers want to plant cotton. Who's going to loan them money? I mean, when you know on the front end, you don't know, but you have to pencil in a loss.
I mean, we have 100 million bale carryover, and really – today we would have higher pricing than nine if we just hadn't lost the blend just in China alone. You know, they lost 9 million bales a year of consumption from where they were. And that's not using the high 50-52 number that they have now to 34, which would be 18 million if they had continued those along those projected paths to where we're at. So the blend level really is the problem. Polyester staple fiber in China is incredibly cheap. You know, the reason we're not losing it in the United States is we don't have all that capacity to produce that fiber here. So cotton is still competitive against polyester here in the United States. But we only use 3.8 million bales. You know, they use 34. Should use 44, but the staple fiber there, and we know what's happening with crude oil prices, so that's going to be, you know, the feedstock there, so polyester is going to stay cheap for a while. And the consumer demand, you know, we went through the majority of my life, you know, we were always taught that the developed countries consumer was going to, the demand was going to pull the cotton through, and surprisingly so, that hasn't happened. You know, and the polyester man-made fiber guys have done a better job from the leisure suits of the 70s to where they are today in the products. And cotton needs to be able to take the offensive again and come back and try to get its demand base built back up. It's critically important.
Need to reinvigorate the fabric of our lives.
One thing, too, has been that I've started to see is a pattern. Since the Great Recession, the consumer, particularly in the United States and in Europe to a lesser degree, has not come back. Joe made a statement earlier, you know, the developed countries has typically been the ones to sort of pick up the ball and carry it. But that hasn't happened. And the last retail sales report for clothing and accessories was an absolute train wreck. And I thought, you know, we keep waiting for this to happen. The consumer is caught up, particularly in the U.S., which is a big consuming area for the apparel and textiles, is being squeezed, the consumer is. And so consequently, the income, the wages are not increasing, and that amount is supposed to be for the sock. I'm not going to buy another pair of socks, nobody sees that. And so you'll go longer and longer before that you have to replace that. And we're seeing that it's demand based for both the share and the consumer. It's just not out there buying the product that we need for them to, particularly in developed areas.
Yeah, I mean, when we, for the cotton market to, and for cotton producers to really start to enjoy better times, the first thing that we had to do, we've talked about this before, is we have to grow less than we use because we know we have a lot of stock. And so this is the first year we're finally getting there. So it's not going to help a lot, but you had to start somewhere. So we're finally at that point. So from here on out, it's only going to get better as far as trying to rectify the situation of these large world stocks that are there. It's not going to happen overnight. It's going to take several years, but it starts with the first step. At least this year we're making it.
Okay. Well, good. Well, let's wrap up the meeting. We want to thank everybody. We want to thank ICE for hosting us. We appreciate that. Also want to thank our sponsors, Cotton Incorporated and Bayer Crop Science and Farm Press Publications. Thank you to iPoint TV for their work. Thank our speakers, Gerald and Kip and OA. We appreciate your contribution here. And also a thank you to Joe for being with us. We appreciate what you shared with us today. So that concludes our meeting, and thanks for being with us today at our New York Cotton Market Roundtable.
Thank you, Pat.
Thank you.
Thank you, Pat.